The next day brought rain again, so the fourth chieftain meeting was moved inside the lodge due to the showers. Wraith wasn't there. Persephone had looked for Wraith the day before, but he wasn't under the wool, and she couldn't find him around the wall. She'd gone down to the village, thinking he might have gone there, but no such luck. She needed to speak to him, had to change his mind, though she didn't know how. Everything he said was true. They might have overwhelming numbers, but for how long? If their weapons snapped as easily as the spears held by Lippitt's men, they would need a miracle to prevail. She had stopped looking as night fell, glad she hadn't found him. She didn't know what she would or could have said to him. At first, she was fearful he might have left, but Malcolm explained that he was still in Tyre and training a young boy to fight. Because of the lodge's tight quarters, few others besides the chieftains were present. Alward was alone, and so was Harkham. Tegan only had his shield, whose name Persephone thought was Oz. No one joined Persephone except Bryn. Alward stood at the door looking out at the rain.
Awful way to treat such a fine sword. Why has no one pulled it out?
Go ahead. No one is stopping you.
Alward returned to his chair and faced the others.
So what do we do?
Nifron makes a good case. We have to fight.
Wraith also makes sense. We've already lost.
Perhaps we could go back.
Back?
Across the sea. Can't we just get in boats and head across the water and escape all this? Isn't that where we came from? Can't we just go home?
Alward looked at Bryn.
You're Wren's keeper, right? What do the Ways say about that?
Everyone looked at the girl, who appeared shocked that she was expected to speak.
Well?
Bryn looked at Persephone.
Tell him. Tell him what you know. This is why we have keepers.
We did come across a sea, but no one really knows which. It might have been this one or another, but it wouldn't matter. There's no place to go back to. The old world sank. That's why we had to leave. That's why we sailed here. If you sail out there, you could fall off the world.
What about Carrick? For the Derg city? That isn't too far away, is it?
Lippitt shook his head.
We trade with the Derg in Tyre, but they wouldn't welcome us there. They're not a trusting lot and would assume we were invading. One war is more than enough.
Alward folded his arms and slumped in his seat.
It all just seems so hopeless.
Krugan was leaning forward, his elbows on his knees and his chin in his hands.
Maybe, instead of deciding which man to make Keenig, we should first decide which god to pray to. And I will be the first to say, it shouldn't be Mayen. He's not been kind to us of late. He's turned a deaf ear to his people, and this...
He swept his arm toward the doorway.
This only confirms he's abandoned us.
I can't suggest Krun. He's fine with wheat and helping the sick, but he's no god of war.
I would have proclaimed the might of Iraphus, but...
Lippitt looked at Persephone.
Her god is greater. We closed our gates to them, and Mari blew them off their hinges. Then she flew in, bearing gifts of food, drink, tools, and furs. Wren's goddess is powerful and generous.
Is that true?
Persephone looked out through the open door at the stone figure still there, slick and dark with rain.
I've always felt she listened when we prayed to her.
Then perhaps we should do that. Pray to Mari for a way out of this.
I brought a prized pig with me. Tomorrow, I'll offer it in sacrifice.
We'll all offer sacrifices. Offer her our best and pledge our loyalty in return for saving us. Maybe she can send someone who'll draw that sword from the pillar. And then she'll rain down thousands of swords. Tens of thousands! Enough to equip every able-bodied man. Then, with Nifron's training and Mari's swords, we'll have a chance.
By now, he was speaking to no one in particular.
Do you think that would work?
Lippitt looked out the open door with a surprised, almost frightened expression.
She!
What?
Lippitt pointed at the statue of Mari.
She's looking at it. She's facing the sword in the post. It's a sign. If we reject all other gods in favor of Mari, she will send us a worthy Keenig and swords for our warriors.
The sword belonged to Wraith. Everyone knew that. They also knew his reputation. He killed gods. That blade would remain in the post until Wraith himself retrieved it. Persephone suspected Lippitt thought the same thing, but neither of them said anything. Persephone and Bryn walked back to the shelter of the wool after the meeting ended. Bryn carried the slate, clutched to her chest.
What do you think?
About what exactly?
Do you think Mari will help us?
Persephone paused in the center of the courtyard beside Wraith's sword. Its pommel was wet and dripping with the rain that had dwindled to a half-hearted sprinkle.
There's always hope.
The other chieftains were spending the night in the lodge. Persephone didn't feel comfortable sleeping there. Besides, her place was with her people. And yet she had no doubt the other chieftains spent their nights drinking and talking. Alliances were being formed and trade agreements brokered in that dark and stuffy tomb. Rumor held that Harkin and Krugan had already agreed to trade wool for amber, and during the most recent meeting, they'd sat side by side. Persephone and Wren were becoming isolated, growing even weaker than they already were. She was a poor leader, and Wren was suffering because of it. But what would trade agreements matter if they didn't find a way to fight the fray? Persephone's feet felt heavy as she and Bryn walked out the gates. Her neck and back hurt from sitting in those stiff chairs, and she was hungry. Lippitt had served food at midday, but she couldn't eat much. Stress had killed her appetite. Now hungry, stiff, and sore, the two made their way up the path that wound around the wall.
Your Majesty!
Bryn and Persephone turned to see Frost and Flood jogging up the trail behind them.
They're still here?
It would appear so.
A word, Your Majesty.
The two Durg were still in their metal suits, with broad belts and knee-high boots. The interlocked links of their armor jangled as they jogged to catch up.
Your Majesty!
Persephone shrugged again.
Now that you've had your clan meetings, I wonder if we could enlist some help in approaching Arion once again? Neith is just a short boat trip away. She'll only be gone a few days. I can't begin to express how important her help would be.
I'm sorry. We have our own problems to deal with. We're on the verge of...
The last rays of the setting sun glinted off the Durg's metal shirts. Persephone's eyes narrowed as she focused on the shimmering rings, then shifted her sight to their sheathed swords. She nudged Bryn and pointed. Bryn's eyes widened and she began to nod.
Of course! There's many stories about them making weapons. They make fine ones.
Frost raised his voice.
Delgraclundrians make the best weapons in Alan. We alone possess the secret of metal alloys. We have wrought them into works of art, and we're doing it for generations before your kind even came to rule in.
As good as Frey weapons?
Everything the elves know, our people taught them.
Everything they know they stole, you mean?
Have you seen the sword Wraith carried?
Which one?
The Frey blade. Can you make better swords than that?
Well,
Frost looked at his companion.
Not me, personally. Flood and I aren't weaponsmiths. I told you, we're builders. Walls, pillars, and bridges are our specialty. You want a fortification? We can do that. Rain is a digger. If you need a tunnel, he's your Belgraclungrian. None of us knows much about metallurgy or swordcraft. Those are closely guarded secrets.
But your people can make a decent sword, right?
Of course.
And how many could be made?
What do you mean?
If your people were so inclined, how many swords could they make?
If you are so inclined, how many loaves of bread can your people produce?
We can make thousands of loaves in a very short time. Are you saying yours could do the same with swords?
If we wanted to, certainly. Once we were very good at such things. Back in the days of King Midian, the furnaces of Drumendor provided thousands of swords each day for the war against the elves. And all were better than the one Wraith carries.
Persephone grinned at Bryn, who smiled back.
The giant you spoke of, how badly do you want him dealt with? If I could convince my friend Arion to help you, could you convince your weaponsmith friends to help us?
Frost and Flood exchanged looks of surprise.
I can honestly say Gronbach would be most grateful to be rid of the giant we spoke of. While I can't make any guarantees on his behalf, I think I can arrange a meeting for you to make your case. Would that suffice?
Suffice. The word sounded so weak and tenuous, especially when the fate of an entire race of people might rest upon it.
Yes, I would be in your debt.
Every life is a journey filled with crossroads. And then there are the bridges, Those truly frightening choices that span what always was from what will forever be. Finding the courage or stupidity to cross such bridges changes everything. For me, the life-altering choice was a literal bridge, the one I followed Persephone across on the dock in Verne, the Book of Brynn.
Suri and her wolf were sitting in the open field, out from under the wool.
You're thinking about it, aren't you? What it felt like to touch the cords of creation.
The young mystic had a string pattern in her hands. She'd been holding it for some time, just staring. She'd made the same design on countless occasions and knew hundreds of ways to manipulate the weave to construct any number of patterns, but she didn't move her fingers. Suri ignored the question, and Arion sat down beside her, wet and smelling of the ocean.
Did you fall into the sea?
I bathed. You should try it. But I'm not as clean as I would like. I still feel dirty.
Of course you do. You're odd that way.
No, I think it's the salt. The water was full of it. Dries the skin something terrible. Fun, though. You'd like the waves. They pick you up and heave you along. Like flying.
Suri gave her a smirk. Arion had spewed non-stop butterfly metaphors for days.
It was raining, you know. Works even better than the ocean. No salt.
And yet you look no cleaner for it. Don't smell better, either.
Suri glanced down at herself, puzzled. After days of constant rain, during which she and Minna had explored the tide pools of the rocky coast and the windswept fields surrounding Tyre, she didn't have a spot of dirt on her, except for her legs and feet, where there was no avoiding the mud. Finding no sense in the comment, Suri focused once more on the string between her fingers. She still hadn't decided what to do next. Arion watched her, making Suri feel self-conscious.
What is it?
That's the problem with that game, and why only beginners play it. Once you've touched a real chord, a string is just a string. You realize there are only so many patterns to make. Worse, you see that it's only a toy in comparison with the chords of nature. With the art, there are an infinite number of possibilities. Everything in the world is woven into the same fabric, all linked, and each moment lived creates a new connection, alterations to this unimaginably complex web of life. Some strands can't be moved, others can. Some that don't appear movable at first can be altered if the right conditions are met. Once the strands are aligned, you can strum the chords and play their music. At times, it feels as if anything is possible if only you can work out the complexities.
Arion reached out and stroked Minna's coat. The wolf opened her eyes, but didn't bother to lift her head.
You have the gift of being able to see behind the veil, to view the mechanics of how the world was made and how it works, and the talent to adjust all that to your purpose. Of course, you yourself are part of that weave. You exist in the web. You create the web.
Am I a spider?
No, you don't spin the string. Just as you're doing now, you always start with a loop. Artists can't create anything new. They merely make connections from what exists. But we are also part of what exists. So, we are the web itself. Individual strands in our own string pattern. As you alter the patterns in that string, you are also altering the world around you. And because you are part of this world, you are altering yourself. If you can see this, then you can see the truth. The string you weave is really yourself, and the pattern you make is your own life.
Every time I hear you talk about the art, it seems less appealing.
Tell me the truth. Just before I sat down, you were thinking that your beloved string game isn't anywhere near as much fun as it used to be. Won't you?
We don't like her anymore, do we, Minna?
The wolf lay on her side, a long tongue lying on the dirt as she panted.
You ruined my game, and now look what you've done to Minna. Must be someone else you can bother.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Persephone came out of the dark, trailed by Brynn and the little people, who jingled wherever they went.
Please, interrupt.
Persephone looked puzzled.
Well, I need to speak with Arion.
About what?
You're learning our language so quickly.
No, she's not. If we're going to talk about anything important, speak in Frey. She has a terrible habit of nodding as if she understands. You'll jabber on for an hour, and she'll nod and nod, smiling all along, but she won't understand a thing. Look, she's doing it right now. Do you have any idea what I just said?
Arion bit her lip.
You're speaking about me?
She said each word precisely, deliberately.
Something bad. Something...
Frustrated, she finished in Frey.
Insulting.
Maybe you are getting better.
I'll stick to Frey. Are you aware of the meetings in the lodge?
Yes, you and the other rune chieftains are selecting a leader, planning for war.
Not going well.
Can't decide on a leader?
No, but that's only one problem. We need supplies, weapons. Without them, our people will be... How do you say...
She made a cutting motion across her neck.
Killed.
Slaughtered.
Yes.
Arya nodded toward the little people who'd followed silently behind Persephone.
And they will supply you with weapons?
That's the plan. In exchange for a favor.
The two long-bearded ones watched the conversation intently, while Rain, the one with the big pickaxe, knelt to pet Minna. He bent down to join Bryn, and together they discovered what Suri had known for years, that Minna loved being scratched behind her ears.
Nifron's idea?
No. In a way, it was Wraith's. He refuses to be Keenig, because without better weapons, we don't have a chance.
He's right. This war isn't feasible. I have a better idea, a more reasonable way to mend the break between our peoples.
Feasible? Reasonable? A break?
Persephone's brows rose.
Thousands have been massacred. I think that counts as a bit more than a mere break between our peoples. I don't think it's unreasonable to resist...
To what? Kill thousands more? What good will that do? Why in Feral's name would anyone want that? We need to find a way to coexist. Waging war won't bring that about.
And exactly what will?
Persephone raised her hands in frustration. Arian pointed at Suri and switched to Runic.
She will.
Suri had only been peripherally listening to the conversation. She was more interested in introducing the one named Rain to Minna. But there was no mistaking that last part.
Me?
You what?
Bryn the Keeper had been trying to follow the intent of the conversation for posterity, but she had little knowledge of Frey, and so she was catching only the runic words.
Yes, you. My people think runes are animals, mindless beasts. They feel no guilt about killing your kind, just like they don't consider it wrong to kill a deer. I know. I thought the same way before I met you. We need to prove to my Fane, to all the Frey, that you are worthy of life and deserve respect, dignity, and sovereignty. If they can see we are more similar than they think, they'll see their mistake.
She turned to Persephone.
You want to save your people, and so do I, but not at the expense of my own. Both our people can live together peacefully. Suri is not Frey, but she can use the art even without training. I'm not sure you can appreciate what an amazing discovery that is. Artists, true artists, aren't common even among the Frey. If my Fane could see that the runes can use the art, it will prove that the things that divide us are fewer than the many things we have in common.
So that's why you push so hard.
You're special, Suri. I can feel it the same way I sense the seasons. It's not merely that you can use the art, it's you yourself. You need to prove to the Fane that runes are just as wonderful, as important, as deserving of life as the Frey. If you can do that, they will see their mistake and change their minds. But this can only happen if you accept who you are. Only then can you change the world.
Persephone didn't say anything for a long while. Finally, she broke her silence.
I wish it could be that easy, but the reality is that my people are vulnerable. As long as we can't defend ourselves, we're helpless. Obtaining weapons is crucial to our survival. Suri, what do you think?
I think summers should last longer than winters. I think dandelion wine isn't nearly as good as Tura said it was. I think Minna is the wisest of all wolves, and she sees several problems with Eren's plan. Don't you, Minna?
Such as?
First, I'm not an artist. Yes, I can light a fire, but I don't think that is very impressive, and your Fane wouldn't think so either. The only other time I used magic, it ended in disaster, remember? That giant paid for my mistake with his life.
You killed the giant? The one from the Roar?
Suri was equally surprised. She didn't know the Durg knew the Frey language well enough to follow the conversation.
Yes, but I was trying to free him.
She turned her attention back to Arian.
And second, I'm not likely to meet the Fane. Am I? He sent giants and lightning to kill you, so you probably won't be able to return home at all, let alone with me tagging along.
It's definitely more difficult than it once was. If Grindel hadn't been killed, it would have been easy, but Now things are more complicated.
Can I say something?
Frost asked this question of Suri. She looked at him curiously, the tattoos around her eyes shifting as her brow furrowed.
You just did.
Can I say something else?
If he's going to keep this up, we could be here for a very long time. Isn't that right, Minna?
I was just thinking that if you can kill a giant, then maybe we don't need her.
He nodded his head toward Arion.
Why would you want that?
We have a giant in the city of Neath, which keeps us from our homeland. Your chieftain wants to trade Belgra Clungrian weapons in exchange for getting rid of it.
I just told you. The first time was an accident.
Frost smiled.
Another accident would be fine.
Nobody has got to kill anyone.
Arion began in runic, then switched back to Frey.
Why must everyone turn to such drastic actions as death and war? There are dozens of ways to deal with a giant, and none of them would require its death.
I'm sure you wouldn't feel that way if you met him.
That's because you're not an artist. We're trained to think creatively.
Sorry, we really need help with this. It's very important.
I'll do what I can, but caterpillars really aren't much help.
Huh?
Persephone was as confused as the others. Arion waved a hand dismissively.
It's her way of saying she's not qualified, but she could be. How about this? Suri and I will go to Neath and deal with the giant. Deal with, not kill. Rapnagar's demise was a mistake, one which we both need to atone for. I shouldn't have asked her to attempt such a complicated weave with her current abilities. If properly trained, she'll not only be able to rid Neath of the giant, but she'll also prove to the Fane that she truly is an artist. Persephone will have her weapons, so the runes won't be defenseless, and as much as it saddens me, I understand a fight with my people is inevitable now. Respect must be earned, and if you can win a battle or two, the Fane will be far more inclined to seek out a peaceful solution. That's when Suri can be the solution everyone will welcome.
She paused, then looked directly at Suri.
But you must agree to let me teach you. No more resistance. No more fighting. Your mastery of the art goes beyond your desire to stay as you are. You must spread your wings for the sake of both runes and Frey.
And I'm coming too, to negotiate for the weapons. If no agreement can be reached, then no one is doing anything. Understood?
Agreed. But I think when you see the giant, you'll realize death is the best way to deal with it.
Let me worry about that. As I said, Miralith are trained to be creative. He's likely as unhappy about being locked up in your mountain as you are having him there. I could shrink him to the size of a mouse, put him in a bag, and return him to his homeland.
Mm-hmm, but
While you're ahead. She's coming, and that's the important thing.
Frost nodded. Suri looked down at Minna, and the wolf looked back.
Will you still love me if I become a butterfly, Minna?
The wolf brought up her head and licked Suri's hand.
It's settled, then.
What's settled? What's going on? How am I supposed to act as keeper if you talk in a language I don't understand?
Maybe you should learn, Frey. Come, I'll fill you in while I pack.
Pack? You're going somewhere?
The rain had disrupted life under the wool. Even after it stopped, the ground remained soft. The beaten grass became a muddy mess, then a serious problem as poles refused to stay rooted. Moving anything heavy turned into a monumental chore. Old paths were abandoned for firmer footing, and elevation became the new standard for prosperity. A large, shallow pool had formed in the low basin midway along the wall. The Great Puddle, as it came to be known, displaced several squatters and divided the camp into East and West Puddle. Being on the incline, West Puddle was more desirable. And it was there that Habit, who once tended the fire in the Dal Ren Lodge, built private quarters for Persephone. Apparently, it pained him to see his chieftain sitting on the ground with everyone else. He'd persuaded Farmer Whedon and Bruce Baker to help erect a two-chambered enclosure where they placed the first chair, the only thing Habit had been able to salvage from the ruined lodge. But Persephone never used it. She remained in East Puddle along with the stacked baskets, bundled tools, and the people fearing more rain. There was no political statement being made. Persephone had settled in East Puddle because that was where Bryn, Moya, Padira, and Roan were. She had no intention of leaving them. At least, not until that night. As she packed, she attempted to explain things to her friends.
You're going where?
Across the strait to Belgrig.
Persephone stuffed a blanket into a sack.
If Arion and Suri take care of a giant for the Derg, then I'll get weapons for the war.
She turned to Padira, who was seated on her pillows of wool, sewing together what looked like a sack.
Do you think it will be cold? Should I bring my Breckenmore?
She'd never been to Belgrig. For all she knew, it might be snowing there.
Better to have than regret.
Who else is going?
No one. Oh, well, except for the dwarfs, of course.
Just you three and the shrimps? What about Wraith?
She looked to Malcolm, who was in the process of filling a water skin from the large barrel.
Hasn't said anything to me. Does he know? This is the first I've heard.
He turned to Persephone.
Do you want me to tell...
No,
but he's your shield. He has to go.
Not my shield anymore.
What? When did that happen?
Moya had planted her hands on her hips. It was an excellent imitation of Persephone's mother. The likeness would have been perfect, except Moya wore a short sword slung low on one hip. She'd gotten it as a gift from Tekchen.
How did he come to
give
up?
He can't be my shield and sit as a chieftain, so I released him before the council met. And I forbid each of you from saying anything to him. He might insist on coming or try to chase after me. I need him to stay here and become Keenig. To do that, he has to attend the meeting so the other chieftains can convince him.
Don't you need to be there? You called for the clan assembly. You can't run off in the middle of it.
Any decisions will be made by Tegan, Harkin, Lippet, and Krugan, the chieftains who still have clans. Wraith's people are all but extinct, and yet he has more to say than I do. He's the god killer. I'm only the widow of a chieftain. My words have about as much impact as raindrops. But if I can bring back weapons, good ones, maybe Wraith will change his mind about being the Keenig. If he does, I think the others will pledge their allegiance.
What about Bryn? You're taking her, aren't you?
No, I don't...
But this sounds like an incredible opportunity. I don't think anyone, well, any human, has ever set foot on Belgrig. You'll want her there to remember it.
Bryn's face lit up at the suggestion.
She needs to stay, to witness the choosing of the Keenig. That's of far greater importance.
But there are other keepers for that. I can get the story from them when I get back.
Persephone looked at Bryn, whose eyes were filled with eagerness.
Okay, fine.
Bryn jumped up, grabbed a sack of her own, and started stuffing items inside. She gathered a stack of the slates as well.
You aren't taking those, are you?
Bryn looked down at the three stone tablets.
I mark on them. I draw memories on them. It helps me keep an accurate account. Roan understands them. Others could too. When it comes time for me to train a new keeper, she can just look at these tablets and know everything. I started using chalk, but it smears too easily. Now I'm making deep scratches.
The tablets look heavy.
I'll manage.
And what about your shield? If you dismissed Wraith, who's the replacement?
Nobody. Don't need one.
Sif, you're going to a foreign land to face a giant. You need protection. For the love of Mari, you should be taking a war party.
Moya really was sounding like Persephone's mother, which irritated her, amazed her, and made her miss her parents all at the same time.
We're going with Arion. She's better than 50 strong men.
She's a Frey.
So?
So I don't trust her to protect you.
Moya, we're going on a ship as the guests of the Derg, to a city where Bryn and I will likely spend our time in a room doing nothing while Arion and Suri dispatch this giant. I'm sure Bryn will have a lot to take in, but I'll likely be bored to tears.
Moya didn't look appeased.
What? What do you want from me, Moya?
There's no other choice. I'm going with you.
You what?
Roan spoke for the first time.
Don't be ridiculous, Moya.
You don't think I can protect you?
Moya drew the blade at her side and held it up.
Tekchen has been training me. He says I'm learning fast. And I've impressed everyone.
Are you sure it's your fighting skills he was talking about, my dear?
Moya whirled to face Padira.
What's that supposed to mean?
No one dared answer, but both Bryn and Persephone struggled to suppress a laugh. Moya glared, and then swept the blade across her body. She spun and executed an impressive downstroke, followed by a fast somersault. Back on her feet, she swept again and halted the blade just inches from Persephone's throat, positioned in a threatening manner. Persephone jumped back and nearly fell. No one was inclined to laugh after that. Moya slammed the sword back into its scabbard.
I'm coming with you.
Okay, okay.
And so is Roan.
Huh?
The ex-slave, who was on the ground fiddling with a stick and a rope, looked shocked.
What? No! This is getting out of hand now. We can't leave her here alone. Moya, Roan will be fine. She's not alone. She'll have Padira, Gifford, and... What? What is it, Roan?
I took one of the little spears from one of the three. I just wanted to look at it, study it, feel how it was balanced. I didn't realise that...
Roan?
Gifford found out and he took it back. Told them that he was the one who borrowed it. He was beaten bloody.
What?
Persephone started to leave, going in the direction where Gifford usually slept. Padira caught her by the wrist.
He's not there.
Where is he? How is he? Will he be okay?
The old lady pushed slowly to her feet and waved as if the question wasn't worthy of an answer.
Gifford is like a turtle. He don't run so fast, but there's no break in that hard shell. Got him resting up at West Puddle in that throne room Hobbit built for you. Gifford's lying in the lap of luxury, he is.
Isn't anyone with him?
He don't need much at the moment other than rest, which is why I don't want you going up there and bothering him.
Persephone turned to look at Roan, who sat on the ground, rocking back and forth. Moya sat down next to Roan.
I can't help worrying about what might have happened if Gifford hadn't been there. If she had returned the javelin instead...
They wouldn't hurt a woman, would they?
Moya looked back, with too many questions in her eyes.
I'd like to think not. But look at what they did to a cripple. Maybe to them we're only a little bit above animals. We're almost people. You don't have to treat almost people the same way as real people, do you?
Persephone looked at Roan, who was already back to work, tying her rope to the end of the long stick that lay across her lap.
Is that how Ivor viewed Roan, as an almost person? How else could he have been so cruel?
She imagined Roan being beaten by the Frey, beaten once more for being an almost person.
Pack light, Roan. We're not going to be gone long.
The village of Vernez was built in tiers that descended the stony hillside from the Dáil to the docks. Most of the structures were built of mud bricks, and several were a surprising 2 stories tall. The tight tiers made for narrow streets and even narrower alleys, which had the party trudging along in single file. Frost, flood, and rain were out front like hounds. They left at dawn, partly because Persephone feared that the council would break up if they couldn't agree on a leader, so time was of the essence. But mostly, the hour of departure was determined by the schedule of a Durg trade ship. Frost and Flood had managed to arrange passage for them on the vessel, which would sail once its supplies were loaded. That had turned out to take most of the night. All told, there were 10 of them, counting Minna and the 3 Durg. Persephone continued addressing them as dwarves, having given up any hope of pronouncing the longer version. They didn't mind it nearly as much as being called Durg. She slipped and saved herself on numerous occasions by saying Durwarves. She could see them wince at each slip, but she also thought they appreciated that she was trying. Frost led the way, with Flood right behind, shouting course corrections and insults in equal measure. At that hour, the streets were deserted, and they made good time as they slipped through tight lanes and down steep, narrow stairs. They came upon a wooden pier, and just beyond it, a row of 3 ships. Persephone had only ridden in boats like those used to fish on Dreary Lake, the kind 2 men could carry over their heads. The ships in Vernez were longer than 3 roundhouses, and their fronts were fashioned to look like the faces of beasts. In the center was a tall pole, and across its middle, another pole, half as long, was wrapped in cloth. Doubt crept in. She looked out at the endless horizon, which appeared more infinite now.
What's out there?
She couldn't even separate sky from water.
What if we come upon the place where Arrathis swims? What if we get lost in the dark and miss Belgrig? Could we sail off the edge of the world, as Bryn warned?
Runes never went across the sea, not anymore. She was taking them into the unknown, and she wasn't anything like Gaff. She wasn't even Reglan. They stopped on the dock while Frost and Flood spoke to another Durg, who sported a short beard and a silver ring in his nose that matched the ones in his ears. He wore an unpleasant sneer on his lips. They spoke in the Durg language, and none of it sounded friendly or polite. Looking back out at the endless water, Persephone thought she should have asked Wraith after all, or Malcolm. the Killians. Well, everyone, really. She obviously hadn't thought this through.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Persephone tried to sound reassuring, even if she couldn't convince herself.
Mm-hmm.
Moya gave her an I-told-you-so look, or maybe it was fear she saw on the girl's face. Persephone preferred to think she was angry. If Moya was frightened, they were truly in trouble. They stood alongside one of the ships, which bustled with activity. Every person on board was a Derg, but unlike Frost, Flood, and Rain, they didn't wear metal. Most were shirtless and wore only simple vests or sleeveless tunics. A wooden bridge connected the ship to the dock, and it knocked and rattled with the swells.
It's not too late. We can go back.
And then what?
Moya didn't reply, thank Mari. If she had given any answer, no matter how absurd, Persephone might have given up. She didn't want to get on the ship and go out into the endless void. The idea of depending on the Derg to take them there and back was nearly inconceivable. But the most frightening thing of all was relying on Suri to defeat the giant. Arion was right. The young mystic hadn't been ready when dealing with Ratnagar. Would Arion be able to teach her in time? And if not, would the Frey step in? Yes, Arion opposed the idea of harming the giant. But she'd defend herself and the party if necessary, wouldn't she? Suddenly, none of Persephone's plan sounded sensible or safe.
It's all right. Dent cleared us.
Frost and Flood waved them across the gangway. Everyone, even Arion, paused.
Lippet said runes aren't welcomed in Karrick, that your kind might see our presence as an act of war. Are you sure this won't be a problem?
It could have been, if there were more of you, maybe. But how could a handful of women and a couple of girls be perceived as a threat?
Then why did it take so long to convince that Dent fellow? He seemed quite put out by something. What was it?
The cargo.
Minna? Or me?
Arion's runic was still a bit halting.
It was a long war.
And long ago.
Flood frowned at her.
Losing leaves a bitter taste that lingers long after the sweetness of victory has been forgotten.
Well said.
Let's go.
Frost hurried across the bobbing bridge. Rain followed him across, with Flood close behind. Everyone else waited for Persephone. She stared across the bridge, missing Reglan more than she had in weeks. He would have told her how foolish she was being. Tell her the whole idea was too risky, too strange. She'd insist, and he would take her hand, letting her squeeze it until the fear went away. Looking at the ship, her hands felt cold and empty. She was only the widow of a man who had led a small clan of woodsmen, shepherds, and huntsmen. But if she didn't cross that bridge, none of her companions would. Not even the Miraleaf. The phrase, "We'll do it together," came to her once more. She'd heard her friend Arya say it to her many years ago, when they faced an unknown mystery. She took the nearest hand she could find, Bryn's, and held it tight, waiting for the fear to pass. It didn't, but she crossed the bridge anyway.
There are many lies spoken during a war, even more before one. That is how they start. The Book of Bryn.
The pitcher and glasses that Mawindule had smashed in the council chambers had been replaced. He wondered if his father had used the art the way the traitor once had and reassembled the pieces. Sadly, the art couldn't reassemble his father's dusty attitude into something sensible. A week had gone by since Mawindule's outburst in the meeting, and his father hadn't said a word. No lecture, no shouting, no punishment of any sort. The lack of action didn't surprise Mawindule. His father was weak, whether confronting his son or the murderers of Grindal. The Fane was weak, period. Everyone praised Lothian's performance in the Carfrain arena during the challenge, but Mawindule still recalled how Grindal had dealt with runes on the frontier. Simply a flick of his fingers, and five runes died in a burst of blood. That sent a better message. His father just didn't understand. Mawindule slouched deep in the chair while his father's advisors were seated around the big table. They were discussing, well, Mawindule had no idea what they were babbling about. He was trying his best to ignore them. A fly entered the room and landed on the Miraleaf banner hanging high on the wall. Mawindule trapped it there with the art, holding the tiny creature frozen to the cloth. He wondered what the fly was thinking. Could it think? Did it have the concept of a god? Did it wonder if it had offended one? If he let it live, the fly might return home and tell his fellow insects of the strange experience. It would likely feel as if it had been singled out for some grand purpose by the divine. What else could it think? It certainly couldn't begin to fathom that a prince stuck in a council meeting had trapped it for a time simply out of boredom. Things happen for reasons. The fly must conclude this, or else abandon all belief that it was the center of the universe. Out of pity, and the kindness born from Mawindula's desire that the fly and its brethren would never discover how truly insignificant they were, he pressed his fingertips together. Across the room, and 9 feet up the wall, a tiny fly died an honorable, so yet inconsequential
from
death.
Our sources that assassins may have
the word
been
assassins brought Mawindula back to the conversation. When he'd last paid attention, Caban had been babbling about a request from the Guaidri for more rain to help the faltering crops, and a countering request from the Elowin for clear skies to help them meet the midsummer deadline for building the new temple to Feral. The latter was supported by the Umalan, but the former, as Caban put it, isn't something you can go without. The debate had raged in monotonous voices. Mawindule was almost certain there had been some discussion about revenues, but he never listened when finances were brought up. He was certain that nothing was duller. Assassins, however, weren't financial issues, unless his father was hiring some to kill Nifron and the traitor. Either way, they had his attention.
Their purpose would be to kill you, my great Fane.
How certain are you of this?
Fairly sure, my Fane.
I'm still investigating, but my sources are usually reliable.
The runes are hiring assassins to kill my father?
I can't believe it. This has to be a mistake, a silly rumor. Frey don't kill Frey.
It's not the runes? The threat is coming from within?
If they feel justified in their belief, they might. There is a great deal of concern right now about the Miralith legacy. The other tribes are frightened that the law of Feral might be suspended and the horn denied. Or the right to challenge will become pointless, given the obvious outcome.
Seriously? These people are concerning themselves with the next challenge already? The Uli Vermaar isn't for another 3,000 years.
Well, my Fane, 3,000 years or your death. And you aren't so young anymore.
My mother lived too long.
He looked over at Mawindule.
But don't get your hopes up. I still have another 1,000 years, at least.
A continued Miralith reign is exactly what the subordinate tribes are worried about.
If that's so, an assassination wouldn't help anything. Even if they were successful, Mawindule would take the forest throne. And even with his meager skills in the art, he could easily defeat the best challenger from any other tribe. They would still be ruled by a member of the Miralith.
Meager skills?
Perhaps assassination would be used as a deterrent.
What if every Miralith who took the forest throne were killed? Would Miralith stop petitioning and leave the field to others? The horn makes all challenges a fair fight, but a goblet of poison? A knife in the back? These are difficult for even a Miralith to survive, are they not?
And they would do this, knowing Feral would reject them, that they would be cast out of the afterlife and Frey society. They would be isolated from everyone, even their ancestors.
As I said, if one feels the sacrifice is worth it, if one thinks there is no other way, it is entirely possible.
You're saying the other tribes are planning to kill my father?
Everyone turned and looked. Each had the same expression of surprise, as if none had remembered he was there.
We don't know anything for certain, my prince.
The Master of Secrets obviously presumed Mawindule cared about his father's well-being, which made Mawindule question the wisdom of his title.
You don't need to worry. The tribes have no understanding of the art. If they did, they wouldn't dream of such things. The Tawara is well protected.
The Fane's food is cleaned by a Miralith. All doors and windows are sealed by the art each night, and only those assigned residency may enter these walls. Besides, I expect to get to the bottom of these rumors quite soon, and then we can eliminate those responsible.
My Fane?
Vidar arrived near the end of the meeting, as he usually did. His only reason for coming was to learn what, if any, directive the Fane might wish to relay to the Aquila.
The meeting is about to convene. Your son and I...
Yes.
Lothian swept his fingers at them.
Be off.
Before they reached the door, Vasek held up a hand to stop them.
If I may, my Fane. Should these rumors prove true, the safest and easiest solution would be to calm any fears that might lead to such an act.
Vidar needs to continue to assure the other tribes that they all have a voice within the Aquila, and that there are no plans to change that dynamic. It may help to ease tensions until I can learn more.
The Fane nodded his agreement and looked sternly at Vidar.
I shall do my best, as always, my Fane.
Then, without so much as a look at the prince, Vidar walked out, leaving Mawindule to chase behind. A kick from Vidar brought Mawindule back from a doze. His second Aquila meeting was more boring than the first. Macareta wasn't there. He looked repeatedly. The topic being discussed wasn't the assassination possibility, but rather the drainage of the tea fields. No matter how hard Mawindule tried, he couldn't keep his eyes open. In his wandering mind, an assassin was stalking him through an unfamiliar section of the Talwara, which was strange because he knew every inch. The killer had already murdered his father and was giving chase down endless corridors. The would-be butcher was a huge shadow that leapt out quite suddenly. Mawindule tried to scream, but couldn't. He tried to summon the art, but nothing happened. He then resorted to running, but the killer got a grip on Mawindule's leg, squeezing until a sudden pain gripped him. When he woke, it was less the pain of another kick from Vidar and more the terror of the nightmare that caused him to scream. Regardless of the origin, the result was catastrophic. Everyone in the chamber stopped and looked at him in shock. Vidar appeared the most surprised of all as he leaned away, his mouth hanging open, eyes wide.
Pay attention, you little fool!
Maybe Vidar hadn't meant to speak as loud as he did, but there was no doubt everyone in the chamber had heard. Unfortunately, this included the lovely Miralith with kitten eyes, now sitting in the gallery's front row. Macareta had apparently showed up too late to keep Mawindule awake, but just in time for his most humiliating experience since the traitor had stopped him from ending the life of the god-killer. After the Aquila adjourned, Vidar reprimanded him further, but Mawindule wanted to catch Macareta on her way out and ask her if they could go somewhere before the meeting. He was hoping she would tell him where she lived. Instead, Mawindule was trapped, listening to a lecture from a second-rate Miralith.
Your father will hear about this, but that should be the least of your worries.
Mawindule realized who the shadow in his dream had been, a more frightening version of the senior counselor with fangs and claws.
You've tarnished not only your reputation in this esteemed body, but mine as well.
Mawindule was stunned by Vidar's anger, but not so much so that he would assume a role that was subservient to a lesser Miralith.
I'm the prince. Why should I listen to you?
Vidar smiled then, and when he did, the senior counselor really did look like the thing from the nightmare.
Politics, my boy. You might be Lothian's son, but trust me, I can ruin you. I'll make everyone in the city hate you, including your own father.
And when I become Fane, I'll have you executed.
I'm 2,700 years old, boy. I won't live long enough to give you the satisfaction. You, on the other hand, will have to live with the soiled reputation for the rest of your long life. Think about that the next time your actions could make a fool of me.
Mawindule hadn't been trying to embarrass the senior counselor in the meeting, but at that moment, he preferred that Vidar thought he had. The old fool walked out, leaving Mawindule under the great dome of Caraticus and Glindora, the basket weaver. When Mawindule turned to leave, he realized he hadn't been completely alone. Imali was still seated in her center chair, watching him, her old fish eyes peering at him in a sickening fashion.
That didn't go so well, did it?
Mawindule shook his head.
Vidar is an ass.
The prince was stunned by her plain speech.
Some aspire to these seats to better serve their fellow Frey. Some feel called, others obligated. People like Vidar do it for the prestige and the respect the position usually bestows. But he doesn't understand that respect isn't something you get from a position, or even from past achievements. Respect has to be earned and re-earned with every single person you meet. Vidar never learned that lesson, and as a result, he has never found the regard he so dearly craves, even from a pup like you. Oh, it gnaws at him, this feeling that he should be bowed to when he's laughed at instead.
I didn't do it to make people laugh at him. I just fell asleep and had a nightmare.
doesn't matter. In his mind, you did it on purpose, and people have been laughing at him his whole life. Well, they haven't, of course. Any more than you intentionally tried to embarrass him. But like all of us, he sees what he looks for. And after 2,700 years, he has certain expectations.
She got up and walked toward him. As she did, she glanced up toward the gallery behind Mawandula's head. He quickly spun, thinking Makareta might be there, that she might have come back in. But the rows were still empty. Imali smiled at him.
Mawandule, you're young. I know you don't think you are, but you're still very much a child. Don't take what I'm about to say the wrong way. This isn't about you personally. I think anyone under 1,000 shouldn't be allowed outside without a guardian. You need to be more guarded. You're the prince. You will inherit the forest throne, and if you survive the challenge, you will be fane. There are many people who would like to harness the power that you will one day wield.
Apparently not Vidar.
As I said, Vidar is an ass, but he's only an ass.
His grin grew wider. He liked it when she berated Vidar.
There are others far more ambitious, far more sinister than he. Just remember that the one you see isn't nearly so dangerous as the ones you don't.
She looked up toward the gallery once more, then walked out, leaving him alone beneath the steady gaze of Caratacus and Glendora.